Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for Monday, July the 13th, 2020. This is Air Force veteran David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. I hope you all are doing well. We have lots of news of interest to veterans and their families. But first, let's say hello to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard. How's it going?
Hey, David. Oh, good, David. And how are you doing? And
hanging in.
Everybody
there.
Out there, I hope everybody's doing okay. It's Monday, July 13th, 2020. I hope everybody's staying healthy and persevering through these difficult times due to COVID-19 virus, as well as the resulting economic turmoil with many people out of work. You know, before we get to the show, David, here in Florida, over the weekend, we had a spike that apparently exceeded the highest spiking in New York State, which was back in April. Apparently our numbers are going up so bad that if we were a country, we would be ranked number four behind, it would be the United States, Brazil, India, and then Florida. That's how bad our spiking is going. So I say that because, you know, people in Florida who's ever listening, I hope you are taking this seriously. I hope you're wearing your mask. I hope you're doing your social distancing. Today I was out, went to the post office. I was shocked, David. I walked into the post office. Now, the people behind, at the counter were behind the glass. They have the glass put up now. I'm sure you've seen that. And a lot of the post offices around here will also wear the mask, but some of them don't wear the mask and they just have the glass up. But while I was in there, and I had my mask on, I walk in with it, and while I was in there, there were at least four or five people coming in. Nobody was wearing a mask. And this is one of the smaller post offices in the area where I am. So that you really shouldn't have even had, if you did the 6 feet social distancing, you probably shouldn't have had five or six people in this post office. And they weren't wearing the mask. And I was kind of shocked. Because the numbers here in Florida are so bad. It's horrific. It's absolutely horrific.
Yeah.
And, that wearing the mask might, at least, somehow deal with the problem, but it would also show everybody that we're all in this together. We're part of the same team and we're looking after each other's health. But when I was in that post office, boy, I didn't say anything, didn't want to make an issue about it. And I did my business and walked out of there, but I was very surprised that they didn't make it mandatory. When you're walking into a post office, it's a federal, basically it's a federal building. It's
right.
Like down in St. Pete at the VA, you've got to walk in there with a mask on. These are just little things that I'm watching. And then when you see the spiking going on as well, I just scratch my head and wonder what the heck Floridians are doing.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you're a little bit south of me. I'm not sure what the situation is in the Brandon.
I had the same experience today, actually, because went to the post office. Post offices are essential businesses. They're part of commerce. And I had a large package files that I was expecting from a client today. And sure enough, in my P.O. box, there was a yellow card I had to take up to the counter. Well, when I first was in there, the line, it's bizarre because in the last few weeks, the lines at the post office in my town, it's been like Christmas season lines. And with social distancing, the lines seem even longer than they are, because people have to stand apart. And like you say, the clerks have plastic, screens in front of them now, which partly cover things. But like you say, I saw the same thing, which was, there were a noticeable number of people without masks, and I actually thought in in Florida, in, at least in this area, that that they were still requiring that if you're going into a public place, public building, that you had to wear a mask. So it was just surprising how many people did not. So when I saw that long line, even though I had to pick up this package, I just left. And I went back several hours later, and the line was still as long. But this time, there was a postal employee actually staffing the package pickup window. So I was able to short-circuit the entire line and get there. But otherwise, you're standing in this line with some people without masks on. Even if you're wearing a mask, you know, what's the risk there? So it's really really a bizarre time we're living in, and like you say, you know, people have just got to try to do their part. So,
you know, I have a client. Actually, he's deceased now, but he was the father of my neighbor, and he died a few weeks. Well, he died 10 days ago, and they had his. He's a veteran, obviously. He was a member of the 101st Airborne. Great guy, Steve Leonard, wonderful man, and they had his memorial out at Bushnell, just the immediate family. And then I just found out today that the doctor who needs to sign off on the death certificate, he's down in Miami, on the front lines dealing with COVID-19, helping
wow.
people down there. But the problem is he's apparently they're waiting for him to come back, to Citrus County, which is north of Tampa, which is about a 5-hour drive from Miami, and sign a death certificate. And they don't know when he's going to come back. So basically, they want to cremate Steve, and he's still sitting at the funeral home.
Wow.
And it's been 10 days since he passed away. So, you know, that's just I bring that to people's attention because that's another consequence of the COVID-19. You know, the doctor who would be signing the death certificate, he's down in Miami on the front lines helping people, and he can't be back here and just sign that death certificate. I don't know if they can mail it to him or what, but apparently that's the problem. And, so there's all sorts of, you know, you hear all sorts of stories that, you know, as a result of COVID-19, how it's altering people's lives and affecting different families. You know, in Florida, it's no longer an old people's virus. You know, a lot of young people are starting to get the virus. And I forget what the average age is now, but it's not an old person's, you know. I mean, I hear some people say, well, that person was elderly, or that person already had symptoms, or that person had diabetes or a heart issue or something else. Well, you know, that's not necessarily the case anymore. You're getting a lot of young people here in Florida. So, but I just ask everybody out there, you know, I know it's a personal choice, but I really think that it's not too much to ask for people to step up to the plate and wear a mask, abide by some reasonable social distancing. It's really not that much of an inconvenience. And if you're trying to make an issue by just not wearing a mask, I think that's being disrespectful to your neighbor. And we're here to help others, you know, and so just put the mask on and help your neighbors. So with that, I just want to remind everybody that our show is a call-in show. And, you know, veterans, if you're listening tonight, or anybody else who's not a veteran and you want to weigh in on the whole COVID-19 and wearing of a mask, and maybe you're up in New York or maybe you're out west, you know, what's the situation like there? Please give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. We don't have a guest tonight. So we've got a full 60 minutes of a lot of conversation and a lot of VA news. So that call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, 1-888-627-6008. And like I said, we have lots of news. The U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs announced on July 9th its commitment to extend debt relief to veterans adversely impacted by COVID-19 to the end of 2020 by suspending certain debt collection actions. That's terrific. That's great news. The department recognizes veterans and beneficiaries are still being greatly impacted by the coronavirus, prompting the extension of financial relief for debts which some veterans owe to the VA. Veterans and their families should be focused on their health and safety during the pandemic, said VA Secretary Robert Wilkie. VA is taking action to give those with pending debts greater flexibility during these challenging times. VA is suspending all actions on veteran debts under the jurisdiction of the U.S. Treasury Department. This includes the suspension of collection action or extending repayment terms on pre-existing VA debts, whichever the veteran prefers. For benefit debts, such as those caused by an overpayment, veterans should contact the VA Debt Management Center at 1-800-827-0648. For healthcare debts, veterans should contact the Health Resource Center at 1-866-400-1238 or go to the website pay.gov for payments. Again, the VA Debt Management Center is 1-800-827-0648, and the healthcare debts at the Health Resource Center is 1-866-400-1238, or you can go to pay.gov, that's pay.gov, for payments. Hey, David, how about some more news there?
Well, speaking of debts and the U.S. Treasury, I just wanted to remind listeners that, you know, the normal federal tax deadline every year is April the 15th, but this year, because of the coronavirus, the Treasury Department extended it to July 15th, which is 2 days from now. So if you're in that situation and you have any questions, go to irs.gov. For details. We have other news from the VA. The VA announced this past week that a nonprofit organization called Help Heal Veterans, whose website is healvets.org, has provided the VA with nearly 50,000 craft kits since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic in March. And those kits were provided to more than 90 VA facilities around the country for veterans who are isolated. The VA's voluntary service, which is a part of their organization that benefits from volunteers that participate, and also the VA's recreation therapy service, they are working with VA providers to identify veteran inpatients and outpatients to receive these craft kits, again, provided by the organization Help Heal Veterans. And they will be accompanied by other leisure activities and information about VA programs and services. According to VA Secretary Robert Wilkie in a press release this past week, quote, part of VA's charge is to support the positive mental health of veterans, and these crafts and leisure activities can benefit that effort. Help Heal Veterans offering will provide more than 70,000 hours of activity, helping to keep our veterans productively engaged, giving them a positive sense of accomplishment upon completion, unquote. The press release also said that the VA recreation therapists nationwide share that veterans living with disabilities, pain, anxiety, addiction, or depression, especially during this pandemic, enjoy the craft kits and experience multiple benefits, including keeping their hands busy while helping them maintain dexterity. Many veterans gift the finished crafts that they've made to friends, families, and other veterans. VA peer support specialists have also distributed the craft kits to veterans in the community. Now, this organization called Help Heal Veterans has had a long-standing partnership with the VA and typically provides these kits in categories such as woodwork, jewelry, paint-by-numbers, needlecraft, poster art, scrapbooks, model cars, model airplanes, model boats, etc. In a recent survey of veterans who used the kits, 94% of those veterans reported the kits gave them a more positive outlook on life, and 98% reported the kits diverted their attention to healthy coping practices. The therapeutic and rehabilitative benefits of crafting for VA patients is especially significant for veterans living with post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury. To learn more about recreation therapy or to volunteer with the VA, visit the VA's Recreation Therapy Service. The website is prosthetics.va.gov. Let me spell that for you. Prosthetics is prosthetics.va.gov. That's prosthetics.va.gov/rectherapy, R-E-C, and then therapy, therapy, /index.asp. But if you have trouble with that long website, just go to prosthetics.va.gov and then look for the recreation therapy section. You can also, if you're interested in being a volunteer, go to the VA's voluntary service website. This is easy to remember. It's volunteer.va.gov. That's volunteer.va.gov. And again, the organization Help Heal Veterans website is healvets.org. 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 It's a good website. Check it out. See what that organization is doing to help veterans and see how perhaps you can contribute to their excellent mission. So, a lot more news. Rick, what do you have for us tonight?
Yeah, I got some news about the VA's Disability Appeals Program. The VA announced last Monday that it has reached a significant milestone in the overall Legacy Appeals Resolution Plan with the Veterans Benefits Administration, the VBA, completing actions on nearly all non-remand legacy appeals as of July 4, 2020. The term legacy appeals refers to appeals for disability benefits for cases still underway before the passage of the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017, or so-called the Appeals Modernization Act, or AMA. The non-remand inventory includes notices of disagreements at the regional office level and substantive appeals at the Board of Veteran Appeals filed in the legacy system before passage of the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. Prior to implementing the AMA, the overall VA-wide legacy appeals inventory was more than 400,000, said VA Secretary Robert Wilkie. From February 2019 to the present, VBA, the Board of Veteran Appeals, and Veterans Health Administration have worked collectively to reduce the numbers to less than 200,000, a more than 50% reduction. In conjunction with hitting this milestone, the VBA's Appeals Management Office will be known as the Office of Administrative Review, OAR, under the new name. OAR will work to reduce VBA's legacy remand inventory, administer VBA's higher-level review program, and oversee VBA's Decision Review Operations Center, which processes AMA higher-level reviews, higher-level review returns, and board remands and grants. According to the VA press release, the VA says it's on target to meet the goal of resolving legacy appeals under the Legacy Appeals Resolution Plan by December 2022, which, by the way, is 2.5 years away. You know, the board remand program, I don't know what your experience or opinion is, David, but I'm not too happy with the progress on my clients' cases. It seems like, you know, I guess I should back up when the BVA makes a decision and remands a case back to the VA for what they call further development, meaning gathering new evidence, whether it's from the VA side or from the client, from the veteran side, you know, that's a separate process in order to hopefully end up with a favorable result on behalf of the veteran. Well, what I'm seeing, not just because of the pandemic, even prior to the pandemic, is a very, very unreasonable delay in working these cases. I mean, I've got some cases that are, I think one at this point is 10 years old.
Wow.
And you know, the last bit, and you know the case I'm referring to, David, because the last, you know, I was pushing them. And then all of a sudden we get this email that they went out and requested a copy of our client's military file to verify an event that occurred during training. It was a situation involving the South Korean and the United States playing a little war game, and he incurred a helicopter 360 incident. In any event, they're trying to verify that. Well, you and I, David, had already done that. We did that before we even went to the first hearing at the VA. And, you know, we made the Board of Veteran Appeals aware of it at the time that we appealed the case. And then all of a sudden, and I think this was 6 months ago, we get this crazy letter from the VA saying, you know, oh, we're going to check and see if we can find the records. Well, we know there's not going to be a record. They're just doing that to be able to say that they're doing something on the file and that this is necessary. It's essential that they do this, even though it's already been done. It's been documented that it's been done, but they're just doing this for further delay. And, you know, thank goodness that our client is in his mid-50s, so he can wait them out. But imagine if this veteran was in his late 70s, early 80s, with some serious health concerns that could jeopardize his life. He could very well just die before this case ever got settled. So, you know, they've got a lot of work. You know, it's great that Secretary Wilkie wants to sing some praises here, and you know, maybe in some respects it's warranted, but as far as I'm concerned, they are still missing the boat big time, and they really need to, work on these cases. You know, we have at the VA, we've got a contact down there who's a decision review officer, and he's been very helpful over the years. And every once in a while, I'll shoot him an email and say, look, you know, can you check on this case? It was remanded back to the VA. Can you give me a status? And or maybe you can even pull the file and let's work it. Let's see if we can settle the case. You know, the evidence is there. And his response, and you know, this guy's a good guy. If he could do it, he would do it. But he gets back and he says, oh, that's not my department. That's the remand department. Well, unfortunately, you know, we just have to sit back and wait. But very frustrating, Dave. What do you think?
Yeah, and to me, from my perspective, it's really a mixed bag. I've seen cases where, you know, the BVA has remanded cases, let's say for a new medical opinion, and the new medical opinion has been accomplished relatively quickly. And by that, I mean within maybe 2 months. That's pretty fast. And then in some cases, they've then gone back, you know, with that new medical opinion they've issued. Very often it's on, you know, with the VA, more often than not, it seems like they're unfavorable. And the regional office will issue a statement of the case or a supplemental statement of the case. And with an opportunity, 30 days usually, to rebut that. But then it goes back to the BVA. And I had one case in particular I just got a decision on today where it was actually record time. So it's like I say, as far as speedy action, but it was also a case where we had had to wait a long time initially. So it was just like at the very end, a lot of action, and finally all the persistence and the battling with the VA paid off because we finally got the service connection for this veteran's back condition that he'd been fighting on for about a decade. And
wow, good job.
And that we'd been representing him for over 4 years, and so he was very pleased about that. But it was, you know, we had to appeal this up to the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, which remanded it because it's an appeals court that deals with legal issues. It's not a fact finder, so they had to remand it back for more work. And then that was over. That part was 2.5 years ago, and in that 2.5 years. It was like a tennis match, back and forth, bouncing back between the regional offices for new medical opinions that we were rebutting because they never were favorable until there was probably 5 to 6 BVA decisions in that span of time, believe it or not, back and forth. And then finally this last one, which I attacked, you know, the merits of the opinion. I was really splitting hairs to point out why that opinion, the way it was written, the doctor was intending to shoot down the veteran's claim, but because the opinion was worded the way it was, I was able to turn the wording, the lawyer that I am, turn the wording back against the opinion, and the BVA accepted my interpretation. So finally, we won on the service connection, but we still have one more remand. It's not actually a remand, technically. It's just sending the case back for attaching a rating, which is not technically a remand. It's just to finish the service connection issue. But then who knows? It my point being, who knows what the wait will be now before this veteran to be scheduled for a comp and pen exam, because that's where the rating and then the money will come into play. But the lesson is for veterans is don't give up, because if you give up, then the VA will win. There's no guarantee. You know, there's never a guarantee of how long it's going to take, but what we've seen, I think, Rick, you'll agree with this, what we've seen is if you're more persistent than the VA, ultimately, probably 95% of the time, you will ultimately win, or at least win something. It may not be the whole pie, but it'll be a significant win. So you got to be persistent and just hang in there. So,
you know, and that persistence thing, you know, these cases are in what they call the national queue. And even on the remands, they're in the national queue, which means that any examiner in any part of the country can pull that case and take a look at it. So while it doesn't, you know, the negative side there is that there's no consistency with someone from the VA reviewing a file and continuing to work the file, like you and I, David. We've got these clients for years, and we're working them, and we don't have some contractor out there looking at it. So that's the negative side. But you know, so what can happen though is in these situations is someone, I'm just going to use Boise as an example. Someone in Boise all of a sudden opens this up in the national queue and takes a look at it and goes, you know, hey, I see this here. And he may see something, or she may see something favorable to the veteran. And at that point, we can, you know, you can get a favorable decision. So there's a lot of pluses and minuses for the current system, but the bottom line is you got to be persistent. Like you said, David, if you wait them out, generally speaking, the VA is gonna cave in. And, unfortunately they don't cave in from the get-go, from the moment you file the claim.
And usually it's not the regional office level that, and maybe cave in is gives the VA too much credit. It's basically that we've defeated them, basically. It's
right.
And it's usually, and I will give a lot of credit to where it's due, which is the Board of Veterans Appeals, because they have become more thorough, and more thorough usually equates to proper application of the law, which means more often than not, the veteran is going to win. Because veterans, for the most part, in my experience, are not out there pursuing frivolous claims. They're not. They're pursuing disability compensation claims because they truly are disabled and legitimately related to their military service. The veterans, in fact, if anything, there are a lot of veterans out there who have disabilities that should be service-connected but are just too frustrated with the entire system that they don't even, or they're too down because of the mental issues associated with their disabilities that they don't even want to fight the VA. But I give a lot of credit to the Board of Veterans Appeals, especially in the last probably 5 years or so. I think I've said this before on other shows. The BVA's opinions have gotten, I think, better quality, more thorough analysis that you will never get out of a regional office.
Oh, even, that's for
even,
sure.
You will not get any real analysis. They will list the evidence, very often leaving out in their list of evidence a lot of evidence, which itself then becomes an issue on appeal. And they never really weigh the evidence. But to their credit, the Board of Veteran Appeal judges, and Rick, I think you found this in describing some of your video conferences in the last 6 months, that these judges, a lot of them, they're willing to spend a lot of time, even more time than their own policy now of 30 minutes per hearing really says. So it's good that they're doing that. I applaud them. And,
yeah, the last one I had.
I hope it continues.
The last one I had, I told you, it was 2.5 hours. And she was, the judge was great because she was telling me what she wants me to get her so that she can decide the case favorably for the veteran.
Yeah, that's the old duty to assist, which even now under the Appeals Modernization Act, the duty to assist is greatly diminished, which was another way that that law really has messed over veterans. But it's great to hear stories like that. I just hope that once this COVID-19 era passes and they go back to holding their video hearings at the regional offices, you know, and they're trying to tackle the remaining legacy appeals plus the new ones, that these judges are going to do more than what I saw starting last fall, which was judges saying, you got 30 minutes, which really sent a message to me like, is a hearing even worth it, considering you might have to wait a year or two longer than usual just to get a hearing. So,
well, I'll see next week, because I've got, I think I've got 5 or 6 in the next, starting from the 20th to about the 27th. So I'm going to, I'll be obviously paying attention and see what, how much time we're going to have. Hey, David, this is a true story. I'm not trying to be funny to kind of give some humor out there, but here's a VA true funny story. I get a letter today, a copy of a letter today that was sent to my client. And of course, I'm not going to mention the client's name, but he was a junior. So we'll say John Smith Jr. So the letter then goes, Dear Mr. Junior, you know, I mean, I sat back, I just roared when I saw that, and I know it's probably a typo or whatever, but it's just, you know, David, we've been doing this, you know, together for 8 or 9 years representing veterans. We've been talking on the show for 3 years, and we talk about all these different things that happen and the neglect and everything else, and. And then I open the envelope, and there it is. Dear Mr. Junior.
Well, I hope it was accompanied by some correct, favorable information or news.
Well, it was another one of those, you need to use a different form. You know, they spend so much time handling secretarial stuff, handling procedural things, that really, when it gets right down to it, has nothing to do with the claim, has nothing to do with the substantive claim, you know, whether it's a physical injury as a result of being service connected, you know, in combat or post-traumatic stress. You know, they don't send you letters there and you know, trying to get, you know, favorable and encouraging evidence in order to. No, it's all this like wasted time. Put it on this form or put it on that form. It's just gotten crazy, David.
Well, it's the bureaucratic knuckleheads that permeate most bureaucracies. They're there to justify their make work, busy work job that they're going to get paid for the 40 hours they do every week, no matter how productive or not productive. They have to justify it by, it's like before the Appeals Modernization Act, they had this one very simple one-page supplemental claim form that was very concise. Sometimes you had to attach additional paper, you know, pages, if you had a lot of issues. But it was one standalone, very useful form. And now you can't use that form anymore. You have to now use two different forms, which are both longer. One of whom is, you know, the new is for new claims, and if you don't get it right by guessing, sometimes you have to guess whether this issue has ever been addressed or even a closely related issue has ever been addressed. If you don't use the correct form, then again you have this pencil pusher that sends it back saying, well, you have to use this other form. Well, why don't you just stick to the old form that was working well for years?
Right.
You know, there's really no added benefit. That's my point. But instead, this Appeals Modernization Act, which was called the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act, that was a full title. It was supposed to improve things, but instead, all it's done is added some layers of bureaucracy. It's added some pitfalls for veterans and their advocates, actually, that they're going to fall into because of some of these tricky new rules, which are not well publicized. And,
when I interview a new client and we're going through the claims, my interview goes something like this. Now, have you ever filed a claim before? Answer. Yes, I filed for post-traumatic stress and sleep apnea. Okay, great. And what was the result of that? Well, I got 30% on the PTSD and zero or denied on the sleep apnea. Okay, great. Did you file any other claims? No? No? Okay, good. All right. Now, are there any other claims that you'd like to file for that you think were associated with your service? And he lists out, well, my back, you know, because I worked in the yard and I was lifting things, and then, you know, my knee, and I had surgery on my knee shortly after service. I never filed a claim for that. So we file a claim. All right. So I've got two forms going out the door. One for the reopening of the other, already considered case, claims. And now a brand new, claim on a different form, because these, according to my client, are brand new claims. Never been heard before by the VA. And like you said, all of a sudden I get a letter back saying, well, you used the wrong form on the brand new claim. We decided the right knee issue already. So you need to file a different form. You know, so I call my client up and I tell him, I said, well, you know, you did file that. He goes, well, I don't remember doing that. David, this doesn't happen rarely. This happens all the time.
And basically, I would guess that's probably wasted 4 to 6 months of nothing happening, right? That's probably
exactly.
Now
imagine if you don't have, if a veteran doesn't have a representative, doesn't have to be a lawyer, but in our case, you know, I think we're pretty darn good. If a veteran doesn't have that person helping him, and then all of a sudden he gets that letter saying, well, we already decided the knee. Now you got to use a different form. More often than not, these veterans get so frustrated and they hear all the stories and they just throw their hands up in the air and they say, you know something? The heck with it. I'm just not going to bother anymore. And I'm convinced that that's part of the playbook that the VA wants to have happen. Because
right.
if they can discourage and frustrate veterans from filing claims, then that helps them on their end, on the compensation. That's less money going out the door to paying our veterans for their service to their country. And I'm just, you know, of course, you know, I talked to our friend down there in the St. Pete office, and, you know, we laughed a little bit about it. And I tell him, I said, come on, you know, this is true. I mean, I just had another case. I got him to 100%, and he was thrilled. It was, you know, 3 years of retro payments to the guy. He was absolutely thrilled for the work that we did. And then 2 months later, I think it was 2 months or less, he gets a letter in the mail. We are proposing to reduce your coronary artery disease, which will reduce your combined compensation from 100 down to 80. And we're on appeal on that case right now. But I couldn't believe it. You know, the guy was so happy. He was a Vietnam vet, parachute. I mean, the guy had a horrible, horrible time in Vietnam. And, then 2 months after he gets his 100%, he gets a letter saying, we're going to reduce you because your coronary artery disease has gotten better.
Yeah.
What do you, you know?
As they say, it's always something with the VA. And the thing that kills me about some of their letters, that, like you described, you'll file a claim or a supplemental claim, a new claim, and sometimes you'll get a letter back several months later saying, it appears you're filing a claim and you need to use the other form. Well, they haven't identified which issue or which disability out of
right.
what might have been a half a dozen. So you're left to then have to reach back out to the VA to say, which of the half dozen issues are you now claiming should be on a different form? Because they don't bother telling you. And I think it's really part of their strategy, which is push the burden back on the veteran. Make the veteran do more or jump through more hoops, or try to figure out what they have to do instead of really making it easy, which making it easy would be this, Rick, and you know this, that they pick up the phone and call the veteran or the representative and say, hey, look, we got this one form. We've got these new rules we have to follow now under the change of the law, and we need you to use a different form, believe it or not. And just tell them the problem could be solved in one 10-minute phone call instead of correspondence that doesn't answer it. Anyway, the point being, a message we've delivered continuously, which is veterans have to be persistent. Just be aware that this is the way the VA operates.
Here's another one. I just got this letter today. It's a copy of a letter to my client saying, we attempted to call you on the number that you had. And I forget what it said. Either they couldn't reach the veteran or the number wasn't good, something like that. And now they mail this letter. Consider this our notice, our final notice to you. And we have done everything that we need to do to reach out to you. I mean, David, come on. I mean, that is just wrong. I mean, this is litigation. You won, if you were in, you know, and I like to use the word civilian court. If you were in civilian court in litigation, you couldn't write letters like that. You couldn't get away with it.
Well, it's the government. So, but, any event, there's a lot of elements of the VA claim system and appeal system. And that's why it's important, really, that I think veterans reach out, get a good representative, whether it's a veteran, experienced veteran service officer. In some cases, they may need an attorney. There's a lot to it, so reach out for assistance.
You know, and David, one final point before we go on to some more news, because I know you got some more news for us on the Reach program. You know, the VA is really big. They love to talk percentages. We've reduced the workload, the claims by 50%. You know, I mean, ever since we started doing this together, that has always been part of their game plan, you know, showing these percentages. Look how better we are doing. We reduced it by 40%, 50%, 60%. That's great. But you still have another 50% out there that you're dragging your heels on. And, you know, they want to be, you know, applauded and patted on the back for doing their job. And they're still not doing it that well. So anyway, David, why don't you give us some more news on the Reach program?
Okay, thanks. Yeah. An issue that we've talked about, it's not a pleasant issue, but it is an important one, and that's why we'll talk about it briefly tonight. Last Tuesday, July the 7th, the White House and the VA launched what they call the REACH National Public Health Campaign, aimed at empowering everyone, not just mental health professionals, but everyone, to play a role in critical issue of preventing suicide. The goal of the REACH program, which was established by the President's Roadmap to Empower Veterans and End a National Tragedy of Suicide, or the so-called PREVENTS program, is to change the conversation around suicide by urging people to recognize their own risk, and as well as protective factors, as well as the risk and protective factors of their loved ones. According to VA Secretary Robert Wilkie, this program, which they call the REACH program, will empower our nation's veterans to seek and receive help, and it will encourage them to reach out to their brothers and sisters in need who may be vulnerable. The power of this campaign will change how we talk about mental health and suicide in the nation. It will ensure that those in need, especially the men and women who have served our great nation, will receive the care and support they deserve, unquote. According to PREVENTS Executive Director Dr. Barbara Van Dalen, and I quote, the REACH campaign will inspire and educate all Americans, encouraging them to share their own struggles and to reach out to those who are hurting. It will engage our veterans to help lead the way as we change how we think about, talk about, and address suicide. I urge everyone to go to the website wearewithinreach.net and take the PREVENTS pledge to reach and be part of the solution. Together we will prevent suicide, unquote. Now the website, which again is wearewithinreach.net, also includes information on factors that may protect against suicide, such as belonging to a faith-based community, healthy family relationships, having a purpose in life, and strong problem-solving skills. REACH encourages everyone to intentionally strengthen their protective factors to care for their emotional health and well-being, just as they do their physical well-being. Although suicide is preventable, the nation is facing an epidemic in deaths, with 132 Americans dying by suicide each day. In 2017, there were 47,173 suicide deaths and an estimated 1.4 million suicide attempts. For veterans, the overall suicide rate is 1.5 times higher, and the female veteran suicide rate is 2.2 times higher than the general population, even after adjusting for age and or gender. The number of veteran suicides has exceeded 6,000 each year from 2008 to 2017, and suicide is also the 10th leading cause of death among all ages and the second leading cause of death among those aged 10 to 34 in the United States. To that purpose, the REACH campaign website, again, it's wearewithinreach.net, and it's spelled out just as those words are, wearewithinreach.net, N-E-T, provides information to help people recognize those risk factors, including financial stress, chronic illness or pain, isolation and mental illness, whether it's in themselves or in loved ones or friends. It also provides links to resources that can provide assistance in avoiding the hopelessness that can lead to suicide. And Rick, every week we talk about the VA's Coaching into Care program at the end of the show, and we'll do that too in about 5 minutes. That Coaching into Care program is a valuable resource. Now, the website provides information, basically red flags that people can learn to recognize the risk factors, as well as protective factors. Risk factors include things like, did they make a prior suicide attempt, chronic health concerns, chronic pain, the history of mental illness, substance abuse and misuse, access to lethal means, overall sense of helplessness, recent loss, such as the death of a loved one, divorce or loss of a job, legal or financial challenges, relationship difficulties, multiple traumas, adverse childhood experiences, poor quality of life, and other things affecting your health like housing problems, food problems, lack of support, discrimination, social stress, lack of access to health care. Those are all risk factors. Now, of course, those are so broad, you know, most people are affected by one or more of those every day. But the question is to be alert to when things seem to be going too far. Now, on the positive side, there are protective factors, things that can be strengthened to help people, preventive measures, basically. And that includes, excuse me, access to health and mental health care, counseling, for instance, but also substance misuse treatment, because substance misuse is a big risk factor. Also, promoting a sense of connectedness and belonging, promoting good interpersonal relationships, effective problem-solving skills is important, belonging to a faith-based community, religious organization, having a sense of mission or having a sense of purpose in life, good physical health, promoting good physical health, promoting good social and emotional well-being, financial stability, and just overall working to strengthen the quality of one's life. So those are all protective factors, and that includes, you know, helping others in those areas. So if you go to that website, wearewithinreach.net, you can actually take a pledge, just a commitment you're making to help increase awareness of these issues in general, and for all Americans, certainly not just for veterans. This is a problem that affects everyone. So if you're struggling or you are concerned about someone you know, there is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Very important phone number. It's 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255. And then if you press 1, you will be directed specifically to the Lifeline for military veterans or current service members. They even have a chat online at a website, suicidepreventionlifeline.org/chat. But anyway, we'll talk about that in a few more minutes again in our weekly pitch for the VA's Coaching into Care program, which is an excellent one. Before we get to that, Rick, I think you have some more news too on veterans.
Before I do that, you know, one of the things that's very interesting about what you were just talking, and it shows that research shows that for every suicide, 135 people are personally affected. That includes families, friends, coworkers, and community members, which means in 1 year, up to 6.3 million people are directly affected by suicide. That's an amazing number. I know in my own family, we had an uncle of mine committed suicide 40 years ago, and I know the impact that had to my family. And about 135 people, that's pretty amazing. And sad.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say amazing. It's very sad. We know many veterans seeking help getting jobs after they leave the military. VA's Veteran Employment Service Office, VESO, V-E-S-O, provides employment readiness assistance and outreach to transitioning service members, veterans, and eligible military spouses while advocating the use of special hiring authority, employment programs, and veteran retention strategies to help VA become the employer of choice for veterans and military spouses. Its programs include the following. VA for Vets. You've served your country and understand the unique challenges veterans face. See how a career at the VA can help you make a difference in the life of fellow veterans. Match your experience, skills, and training with current federal job opportunities. Market through the VESO office. Visit the featured jobs section on the VA for Vets website, va4vets.va.gov. That's va4vets.va.gov to view available opportunities. Beds for Vets. This is you can match your experience, skills, and training with current federal job opportunities marketed through VESO office. Visit the featured job section on the VA for Vets website to view available opportunities. Recruitment and career readiness support. VESO provides employment readiness assistance to veterans and transitioning service members by attending veteran outreach events, careers, and resource fairs to provide resume coaching, employment, and training information. VESO utilizes the VA for Vets website at va4vets.va.gov to increase awareness of and promote employment opportunities and assist hiring managers with attracting qualified veterans to fill their positions and training information to assist veterans and transitioning service members in successfully finding civilian careers. You can call at 1-202-461-7759. There's also the Disabled Veterans Affirmative Action Program, DVAAP. You can call this program at 1-202-461-7759. This program helps disabled vets increase employment opportunities. And finally, Human Resource Center. The VESO issues training and policy guidance on veterans' preference and special hiring authorities and provides deployment and reintegration service for service members transitioning between work at the VA and service in the National Guard or Reserve. You can call that number at 1-202-461-7759. Or VESOVETS@VA.gov. That was a mouthful. Back to you, David.
Yeah, well, we don't have a whole lot of time left in tonight's show, but I do want to reiterate what you said, Rick. That's an excellent program, and we know many veterans here in Florida, but I know around the country too. They need help getting jobs when they leave the service because it's a tougher transition than even a lot of people in the military realize when they're leaving active duty. They're leaving basically a very unique world, and getting jobs and starting new careers in the civilian sector for many is quite a challenge. So go to this website, va4vets.va.gov, va4vets, and that's F-O-R, V-A-F-O-R, vets.va.gov. A lot of excellent programs, and Rick, thanks for highlighting many of those. So we're about out of time, so Rick, if you could remind us about the VA's important coaching and the care program.
It will be my pleasure. Yep. Every week we highlight this program, the coaching and the care program. This program helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment and loved ones can help. Coaching and the care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call at 1-888-823-7458. The hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, that coaching in the care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has a Veterans Crisis Line to help. That number is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they need. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, that number is at the Veterans Crisis Line, 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Write it down, 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Well, it's time for us to go for this evening. I'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents disabled veterans in VA cases around the country. We'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. And we hope you'll tune in next week, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time here on BBSRadio.com Station 1 for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, hope you have a safe and healthy week, and take care. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on BBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.